My name is Clive Kessel. I was born on the 17th of July 1944, when the country was at war. I joined British Rail on the 28th of August 1961. Strange how these dates stay in your mind. As an engineering student in the signals department. And my training involved 1 year out with all the gangs and the technicians, after which I then went into a university course, a four-year university course, 6 months university, 6 months at various training locations. And I completed that in 1966. But the first year I was working in the Luton and Bedford areas. For part of my first year, I was attached to what were then the Luton linemen, and called technicians now, but they were linemen. And I certainly did work on the Dunstable, Leighton Buzzard, to where the boundary was with the old eastern region, which was somewhere between Harpenden East and Ayot stations. So we used to look after that piece of track. Also included was the Harpenden Hemel Hempstead line, which was a freight-only line then. There wasn't a lot down there to maintain from a signalling point of view. And I obviously worked on the main line through Luton, St Albans and places like that. But I can remember the branch lines extremely well. Bearing in mind I was a native of Luton, so I have travelled from Luton Bute Street station in both directions to Welwyn Garden City, perhaps more correctly Hatfield, but the junction was actually Welwyn Garden City, and also to Dunstable and Leighton Buzzard. Now the line was an interesting one in that it was built by the Great Northern Railway, originally was the first line into Luton, and that went as far as Dunstable, and the bit from Dunstable to Leighton Buzzard was the London and North Western Railway, different company. And they shared a station at Dunstable North, and indeed the London North Western Railway had running powers into Luton Bute Street station. So there were occasional through services from Leighton Buzzard to Luton. But mostly the line was run in two halves, from Welling to Dunstable and from Dunstable to Leighton Buzzard. Now the signalling equipment, by the time I worked on it, some of it was quite modern, some of it was very ancient, and you have to understand that the line at nationalisation passed to the eastern region as far as Dunstable North, because it was part of the London North Eastern Railway. But after a while it was recognised that it would be better to redraw these regional boundaries so that you could take advantage of the technicians or linemen that were available much closer to hand. So the line from Dunstable to somewhere between Harpenden East and Ayot passed over to London Midland Authority and was looked after by the linemen at Luton Midland Road Station. They had to learn the various differences with the signalling equipment of the Great Northern Railway as compared to the Midland Railway. And there were a number of signals on that line called somersault signals, which was a Great Northern invention, where the signal arm, the mechanical signal arm, was hinged in the middle rather than at the end. So when the signalman pulled it off, the thing pivoted around the middle. And these things hadn't been made for donkey's years, and therefore trying to get spares for them when things failed was quite a challenge. And in those days, when mechanical signalling was still quite prevalent across the country, the various signalling districts used to have blacksmiths on board, and they had a portable furnace which they used to take out on a van. And they would make bespoke mechanical parts, rods or couplings or whatever. And I can remember once the blacksmith was called in to Luton, complete with big van and his forge rather than furnace. And they set up shop and they actually produced some mechanical signalling fittings to overcome this great spares problem that we had trying to maintain the bits on the Luton Butte Street line. Now, of course, the line was single, and that meant it had to be controlled by tokens. And these were electric token instruments. So the token sections were from Luton East to Harpenden East, Harpenden East to Ayot, and Ayot to Welling, and from Luton West to Dunstable. Not sure how much you know about token working, but it's a method whereby when you want to send a train down a section of single line, you actually physically give the driver a token from the machine, and the signalmen go through various bell routines and lock and anti-lock devices so that when a token is removed, you can't take a token from the far machine. It's a means of ensuring that you don't get two trains running together on the single line. On the line from Hatfield to Dunstable, there were two types of engines basically used. The passenger trains used what they call N7 tank engines, which were 062s. They were actually a Great Eastern design from before the First World War, but they were built in numbers during the 20s, principally for the Liverpool Street suburban services. But they were unusual in, or the Great Eastern was unusual in that it was an air-braked railway rather than a vacuum-braked railway. And for some strange reason, some passenger coaches were transferred to the Hatfield-Dunstable line, which were air-braked. And therefore, they needed locos with air brake equipment, and these N7s had them. They had a thing called a Westinghouse pump on the front of it, and I can remember as a kid standing on the bridge at Luton Butte Street watching these things go pss, 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 while it was pumping air into the system. You can still see them, actually. Strangely enough, I was down at the Bluebell Railway a couple of weekends ago with one of my grandsons, and there is an engine equipped there with a Westinghouse pump which was doing this pss, 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 up and down. So the passenger trains were invariably worked by N7 locos. The freight services, of which there was quite considerable, particularly from the Luton area, were worked by a similar type of engine but built by the Great Northern Railway called an N2 class, again an 062 tank. That these were only vacuum fitted. And of course, most of the freight trains then were loose coupled anyway. So it didn't matter too much, just so long as the guard had a handbrake and the engine had a brake. And by and large, they were the only engines that you saw on the Luton to Dunstable section. That's the steam era. And that lasted pretty much until about 1959, when the diesel started to appear. And that's quite interesting, because the first diesels which came were what they used to call the English Electric Type 1 class, nowadays known as Type 20s. And these were basically a freight engine, but they could be used on passenger trains quite successfully. But you have to remember, in those days, the passenger trains were heated by steam from the engine. So it was fine during the summer, but during the winter, these engines weren't equipped with steam heating boilers, and therefore, if you used one of these engines, the trains were cold. And they would bring back out of retirement some steam engines from Hatfield Shed, N7 types, in order to work the steam trains. That certainly happened during the winter of 1960-61, and we were quite surprised to see steam engines resume again on the Luton Butte Street line. By the time I started work, which was mid-61, the line was then totally dieselised. Again, the freight engines were these English Electric Type 1s, and on the passenger trains at that time, they were what we call brush Type 2s, the Class 31s they are nowadays, and these used to work the passenger trains still with the existing carriages. And that continued till about 1962, when they managed to acquire some diesel multiple units from elsewhere on the eastern region, and these gradually began to take over the passenger services until the line closed in 64, I think it was. There were other occasions when we worked down there when we had some pole route work to do, as there were no through cables in those days, only local cabling in the station, and all the transmission was on open wires on pole routes. And we went down just to the east of the Vauxhall sidings. There'd been a problem with the pole route there, and they brought the gang down from Bedford. With a chap called Di Rees. It was my first experience of using climbing irons. You can imagine that if you wanted to get up a pole to put the wires back on the insulators, you would normally take a ladder and this sort of thing, but no. You strap these climbing irons onto your leg. They strapped on the inside and they got two spikes on them, so that you actually dug these spikes into the side of the pole. You held the pole where your natural inclination was to hold it closely. But the best way was to get as far away from the pole as you could, with a safety belt on of sorts. I mean, health and safety today would go bananas with this lot. And up you went the pole, dug one in, dug the next one in, until you reached the top of the pole. And then you would adjust your harness to the correct length so that you got two hands free to work on whatever you were doing on the wires, you see. But there were accidents even in those days, because the poles had been there probably since the railway had built and were rotten in parts. So you dug this climbing iron in and whoops, it came out. So yeah, that was quite interesting. I used my first year of training as what I call the University of Life. And I certainly met some interesting characters, which I could never have probably done in any other profession. They were up to all the tricks that you could possibly imagine. Rabbits and mushrooms and all sorts of things. There we go.